I'm Colleen Luckett for EDUCAUSE Now.
And I'm Jerry Bain.
So, I have a question for you in the realm of science.
Okay.
What do you think is the average length of time it takes to develop a gene-based drug, from the point of identifying a gene to creating the medicine?
5 years.
Nope, try again.
10 years?
It actually takes 17 years to develop a gene-based drug. That can literally be a lifetime for those suffering from a disease. But what if we could speed up the research process? That's just what the Science Commons Project is trying to do by helping scientists make their data reusable, by streamlining the materials transfer process, and by helping researchers analyze and use data from disparate sources.
Amazing. And on this episode of EDUCAUSE Now, we talk with John Wilbanks, Vice President of Science Commons, about how they're taking science research to the next level.
We see that creators, digital photographers, bloggers have begun to embrace Creative Commons licensing as a way to get their work more distributed on the internet. How does that fit in the sciences?
And if you're interested in finding out more about what you hear in today's episode, visit the show notes at connect.educause.edu/now.
Imagine a scientist, driven to find a cure for a deadly disease. To find this cure, she must study an obscure protein in the body. A search tells her that there are more than 2,000 research articles on this protein. Perhaps her budget allows for an elite subscription to all the research journals, but behind her, there are thousands of scientists from around the globe who cannot access this information. They're lost as potential collaborators. But that's not the only problem. If our scientist reads an article a day, it'll take her 5 years to acquire the knowledge found in those research articles, not to mention all the tangential information she'd want to look up. And these are just the documents. The average time it takes for the development of a life-saving drug is 17 years. Research and data are often fiercely protected by universities and corporations, so knowledge is often balkanized, lost in databases, or locked up in contracts. This can lead to redundant research, as isolated scientists are left to follow blind alleys, because knowledge is not being shared freely among researchers. But there is an effort to change all of this, to create an environment of openness and encourage the sharing of knowledge. It's a project under the umbrella of Creative Commons, called the Science Commons Project. John Wilbanks is the Vice President of Science Commons, and he says that for real progress to be made, we need to stop thinking in terms of printed media.
So that's where you get the 3-page journal article form of writing. It comes from that old limitation of print media. And that's where you get ideas like we shouldn't convey all of the data with it because that's too expensive. And you get an entire culture that goes along with this idea of the paper. The fact that we even call these things scientific papers sort of tells you how big of a gulf we still have. So we're trying to get people to think about hyperlinking in what they do, to understand that the limitations of cost and transmission imposed by an analog print world have really begun to evaporate.
What if there were a semantic web for science, a way for knowledge to be shared, reused, and extracted in very directed ways that might speed up the process of acquiring materials and permissions surrounding data?
If you think about what the web did, the web brought together all these previously disparate resources that you had to connect to via Gopher and Waze, and you had to sort of combine it all behind your own firewall. And the web really leveled that. All you have to do is put up a web server. You don't have to worry about connecting documents. You just put it on the web, and Google finds it, as long as it's hyperlinked. So the idea is to really make that same push for scholarly content, but to try to do along the way to say, well, if we have to reformat the stuff anyway, let's take a jump and let's make it legally open if it's digital content. Let's make it legally open and digitally described if it's a physical material. And let's use this next generation format to get it into a knowledge network instead of just a document network.
Of course, creating an open regime of sharing and reuse in the sciences is a complicated proposition. The Science Commons Project started by spending a year analyzing the research cycle of scientists because it wasn't immediately clear, outside of research documents and papers, where licensing made sense. At systematic points along the process, they found blockages where a common license might loosen up information sharing.
So there's a copyright problem when you come to the publishing piece of the cycle. There is actually a materials problem, acquisition problem, when it comes to the hypothesis formulation and testing phase. And this is particularly acute in the life sciences. If you've read a paper about a certain kind of stem cell treatment for AIDS, and you can't get the stem cells, it's very difficult for you to actually test your hypothesis. And when you begin to peel that onion, you find this incredible, nasty ecosystem of problems. Scientists are given funding based on a very competitive system. And so their instinct to transfer this kind of information to people that they don't know so that those people can build on it is pretty low.
The only established model for looking at the legal availability of digital content is the web. And Creative Commons has worked to build a continuum from no rights reserved to all rights reserved for creators and owners of content.
But I would actually challenge you to flip that and talk about the rights of the user being as important in some ways as the rights of the owner. So the owner has a right to the integrity of their work, to control the copies that are made of that work. But we should also be thinking about what are the rights of the user, because on the internet, the user becomes a creator as well. And this very traditional method in which we absorb culture and then we recreate culture, or we absorb scholarship and then recreate scholarship, it really is something where we're building on all of these things that are already there and already free. And we've had those rights in an analog world because it was too expensive to enforce the rights of the owner against the rights of the user before we got digital rights management and ubiquitous surveillance tools.
So once you have the ability to share digital materials and stop thinking in terms of printed media, the possibilities open up.
So the place where we're seeing uptake is in the life sciences, because there the information is so complex, multivariate, and large scale that we really don't have many choices but to begin taking a network approach to it. And we are seeing that once you can get a critical mass of knowledge into a graph format, that you can begin to use it to do incredibly powerful things. You can use it to extract very precise answers out of a very complex information space. When you want a list of genes that meet a certain set of criteria, Google gets you a list of papers, documents, web pages, or my blog, because the wisdom of the crowd says my blog is the most linked web page that describes this problem. What you want is a list of genes. So you can use a graph to get a list of genes to see the provenance of all that information and do all sorts of very cool, nerdy stuff. You can also use it to do very sort of lightweight stuff. I mean, once you convert knowledge into this graph format, it becomes very malleable. So we were able to take the Allen Brain Atlas, for example, which Paul Allen put $80 million into. It's a giant visual map of where genes are turned on and off in the mouse brain. It's beautiful. So when we had done the reformat of this into a graph, what we realized is that it was trivial now to put it into Google Maps so that you could zoom in and out, drag and drop, and you could annotate, because the functions that were created for Google to add comments about hotels like this one that we're in, that same functionality can now be leveraged by scientists to collaboratively annotate these brain images.
The proof of concept that Science Commons has created is called the NeuroCommons, which is essentially trying to create a modern pharmaceutical knowledge management system with the free sharing of data and research. But another challenge to creating this semantic web for the sciences is the technical aspects of the network. What would a real knowledge browser entail? Wilbank says that the progress for that is really just beginning.
There's a whole lot of technical work you have to do to make this work, because the structures of the internet for computers and the web for documents don't scale to knowledge. Right. We don't have a domain name system for concepts. We have a domain name system for documents. So if you want this sort of stuff, you've got to go out and do some significant technology infrastructure work. And you have to deal with the fact that the software for the end user is really not there yet.
John Wilbanks, Vice President of the Science Commons Project. If you'd like to hear my entire interview, you can find the link on our show notes at connect.educause.edu/now. And if you'd like to find out more about the Science Commons, visit sciencecommons.org.